The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Agile Uprising podcast is brought to you by VGroup Digital. VGroup Digital provides native cloud-based software development services on iOS, Android, web, Mac, and Windows, as well as enterprise product development, maintenance, and support. VGroup Digital is led by a team of agile practitioners who believe in collaboration, constant feedback, and delivering the highest value at all times. Visit www.vgroupdigital.com for more info and mention the Agile Uprising podcast to get up to 15% off all development services.
This is the Agile Uprising podcast.
All right, welcome to the first official podcast of the Agile Uprising team. Just wanted to introduce the podcast for the first time. Speaking now is Ryan Lockard. I am one of the co-founders, and joining me today I have Jason Cusack and James Gifford. Guys, why don't you go ahead and get your voices heard, give a quick introduction of who you are, what your background is, what you're doing currently.
Sure. You want me to go first, Kev?
Rock it out, man.
I'll do it. So my name is Jason Cusack. Thanks, Ryan, for the intro. From an intro perspective, you know, I think it's probably safe to say that, you know, from an agile perspective, I've been a 10-year practitioner. And honestly, I fell into agile by accident. And as you guys will find out throughout the show, like that was one of the reasons why I wanted to put Agile Uprising together. But as a 10-year practitioner, I've been in roles of a product owner. I've been a scrum master. I've been an FTE that's been a servant leader for small teams. I've been an FTE that's been a servant leader as an executive for a large program. I've built out an agile practice for a consultancy. And most recently, I'm a business owner and road warrior as a coach. So I've seen Agile from so many different angles, and I'm excited to share all those experiences. And I think from like to frame who I am as a practitioner, I would say that I'm a pragmatist over a theorist. I like to go with what works. I don't like to just cite things from books or things that I've read and espouse it as my own original thought or something that I think might work. Gifford knows too that I'm a huge proponent of meta frameworks, which kind of plays into Agile Uprising to an extent. Meta frameworks are essentially talking about not subscribing to any specific framework, but picking the best of breed of each of them. And I think that above all, I've been a beginner and I want to help folks new to the space and spark the same passion that my first coach sparked in me. So that's who I am. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, buddy. So we also have James Gifford with us. So have at it, buddy. What's your story?
You know, I started out agile by just kind of getting tossed into it with that, big monolithic bank. They decided to take their first attempt at agile, and I got drug in as working as a, you know, basically part-time scrum master while one of the project managers were, you know, out on leave. I kind of ran away from it as fast as I could because I really wanted to be a developer. But I never really lost sight of the agile values. I just wasn't ready to kind of be a scrum master. Through the progression, I ended up finding myself leaving a development role to go back to scrum mastering. And then in that transition was when I actually found and started doing more research into the actual manifesto to find out that, you know, for a lot of years I was just doing really bad agile. or for a matter of fact, just doing really bad Scrum. So then I really started looking into the values of it, started exploring all the different frameworks and research, and researching different things. And, you know, that's when I started developing an opinion, kind of like Jason, that, you know, meta frameworks are where it's at. There is no right one framework. They're not a silver bullet. They, you know, there are bits and pieces of them that, you know, ultimately, you know, fit together to really make a, you know, a cohesive thing that you can deliver on. We've been experimenting with them at the last three clients I've been at, and it's been really successful. And it's really opened my mind to the actual mindset that agility is a mindset, and that, you know, it's supported by the four values, the 12 principles, and that there's a whole lot of practices that we can put together to make that work. Stuff that isn't even in the industry yet today, that may be an experiment in my brain, is going to solve some problems. So for me, being able to really, for me to, and becoming part of this Agile uprising, the key thing with this is, you know, it's all about the individuals and interactions. So, you know, being kind of dissatisfied with the local groups, being dissatisfied with the trolls on the LinkedIn groups, like to be able to put together a safe place where we can actually have individuals and interactions, learn from each other, develop relationships through being able to do random meetups every once in a while, maybe a Skype call, and having an online community where I can talk about weird experiments that we've run to try to solve team problems and get feedback on that, or somebody else be able to pick that up and use it. You know, that's kind of a game changer for me. I know Jason's had an opportunity to really influence me. You know, we started talking about scaled retrospectives, you know, when we were together. And now that's a solid piece, it's a solid tool set in my repertoire. That just started out as a conversation, you know, two people, the individuals and interactions in a wacky idea. So, cool. You know, overall, I'm a coach, very pragmatic, but I can lean to the dogmatic side if you need me to. But for the most part, I'm going to go with the flow and get done what needs to make it work.
Nice. So we got James that comes from the development background. We have Jason that came up as a product owner, I guess, originally. So to round it off with what probably makes up the other 80% of people that find their way into Agile, I will be the first to admit that I came through the project management route. I did probably almost a decade as a project manager before actually really cracking the books and getting deep into lean and agile thinking. And for the last 4 or 5 years, that's basically consumed the way that I approach teams, approach problems, approach life. So, I think it's interesting how the three of us are doing this first episode, and the three of us all came at it from various angles. So, all right. So this first episode, the theme of this episode will be, what the hell is the Agile Uprising? So I guess start at the start. For anyone that may be listening, how did this thing come together, guys? What was the start of the Agile Uprising, you know, from where it was nothing to where it is what it is now and where we want to take it? How did this all kind of come together?
Well, it was probably a couple months back, man. I mean, essentially what happened was I was talking to O'Reilly Publishing about some book ideas that I had, and they were very specific into certain aspects of Agile and Scrum. And, you know, I had a 45-minute conversation, and one of the things that the publisher told me was, you know, the content that you have here is amazing, but it's really only reaching a very specific niche on a customer side. And she said, what you really need to do is figure out how can you take the knowledge that you have and make it so that anybody can engage it. And from that moment forward, I started thinking about, you know, that she's totally right. What I should do is figure out because originally this was a blog, right? This is just going to be my personal blog. And so I started writing some articles about the beginning of at least my coaching journey, in terms of, you know, what did I get from my first coach? What are some of the things that my first coach instilled in me? If you guys read it, it's very vulnerable, right? I try to have some fun with it and bare my soul to an extent. but I put up my blog and started writing. And then really, I guess GIF, we had Heart of Agile, and that was just a separate thread and turned into a confluence of having all these people that we had worked with throughout the course of our history kind of come together in one 2-day event.
So what's for anyone that doesn't know, Heart of Agile, what is that?
GIF, you want to take that one?
Yeah. So the Heart of Agile is Alistair Coburn's push to get back to the basics. It's based on the fundamentals of collaborate, deliver, reflect, and improve. So basically boiling the manifesto down to its simplest form.
It was taking that concept of what Alistair was pushing, and you guys actually stood up the first Heart of Agile conference, correct?
We did stand up that Heart of Agile conference. It was 2 days in Philadelphia. You know, we had roughly 125 practitioners ranging from executives all the way down to developers, testers, coaches. We had a really eclectic group of people that came through those doors, all with a focus on an agile mindset as opposed to, you know, just the normal stuff that you would get at a Scrum gathering. So it was a really cool conference, a really good experience.
I think it's funny because by the time the Heart of Agile came around, because I was at the conference, that was at least the second time I've run into Jason Cusack. We bounced into each other in Phoenix at Scrum Gathering either 2014 or 2015. And he introduced himself as, "Hey, I'm somebody who worked at the company you work at now." And I think our timelines didn't actually mesh. And, you know, we talked and didn't talk again for a few years. And for you and me, that was definitely the second time we ran into each other because we were both speakers at a conference a few months prior. So I kind of feel that was the convergence, and probably without, you know, using a word that might be a little touchy here, the genesis of the Agile Uprising as it kind of stands today.
Yeah, Ryan, I think you and I actually met twice. We met once at a table at the Phoenix event, and then I think you and I met again because we started sharing the same story, and I was like, "I think I met you before."
Yeah.
But I think the first time you may have had hair. So I was I was confused about who I was actually talking to, but I think that right after Heart of Agile, we had a great time there, right? We shared our numbers. You know, I'm right now consulting in DC, and I remember texting you. I think I actually connected with you on LinkedIn, and I was like, "Hey, LinkedIn messaging isn't the greatest." Everyone kind of realizes that. That's not a plug for LinkedIn. LinkedIn really needs to fix that shit. But at some level, right, we were messaging through LinkedIn, and you said, "Dude, how great would it be if we just had some easier way to do this, like a Slack channel of some sort?" And I had already created a Slack channel for some other purpose. I invited you to it, and that kind of spawned the invitation of all of our close associates into that channel. And to me, all those things led up to that moment. That Slack channel is what I kind of consider the actual birth of the uprising.
Yeah. And what was interesting was, you know, that Slack channel started off with, honest to God, I think it was just me and you. And then we started, and I think GIF might've been in on it early. And then we started bringing in some of these others, Mike McCalla, Andy Cleff, Andrew Leff, Rob Legati, and some of these other guys who will probably be on the second episode talking about their feelings on the Agile Uprising. But it was, for me, I remember, I think I sent you a text one night, Cusack, where we were sharing more information in that Slack channel than I had ever pulled out of any of the local, regional, or even some of the national conferences that we've been going to, just because we're not a whole bunch of pragmatists, or we're not a whole bunch of, you know, doctrine guys. We're not a whole bunch of guys writing books and, you know, giving these same talks that are regurgitated city after city, conference after conference. We're guys that are living and breathing in the trenches. And we're talking about, "Hey, I ran into this today. How would you guys handle it?" Or, "How have you guys handled distributed retrospectives?" And we've been sharing, we're sharing all this information, and it felt selfish almost for us to kind of share this in the closed wall of the Slack community. And we try to figure out how we can start broadening this and, you know, creating those conversations and interactions that Gifford was talking about a little bit ago, and open it up. And, you know, Slack has its applications, but to make this more scalable, that's when the idea of the coalition kind of came together, right?
Yeah, I mean, so essentially we invited, it was almost like, "Hey, invite one of your best Agile friends to the Slack channel." And then that best Agile friend invited their best Agile friend. And then we ended up having like this channel of 12 or 14 people. And we said, you know, one of the drawbacks of Slack is that we can't, there's no way to get this to a larger community. It's kind of stuck at our channel, right? We could do thousands of screenshots. I mean, I have the messages. I think we traded 1,000 messages that first week, which is kind of crazy. But then Ryan, I think that you started exploring with Matt Morges, the notion of discourse and saying, hey, maybe this is a forum that we can take some of those Slack channel conversations and bring this to a much larger audience so that people can engage and share it.
Yeah. And I think, when we talk about what exactly is the Agile Uprising, it really breaks down into three different chunks. I mean, we're going to spend a good bit of time talking about the coalition, because I think that is the obvious. That is the one that has the most dynamic nature and the most engaging pull. But really, we have curated content as well, which is going to be the ongoing blog, which is either us or anyone that we invite to be writing articles about what the current state of Agile is from their perspective. Sometimes it'll be items that are more obvious and fundamental. Sometimes it'll be more emerging things. Sometimes it might even be something controversial, because at the end of the day, we're not bound to any of the governing bodies. We're not associated with the Scrum Alliance, the Agile Alliance, with any of the scaling frameworks or scrum.org or anything like that. So we free reign to say whatever the author wants, as long as it's not insulting or inflammatory. But then we also have The Heart, which is our free and open communication channel, our online network, our coalition, as we call it, which is coalition.agileuprising.com, if you haven't been there. But I think what's really cool is the third tier, which is kind of our question mark, right? We have a bunch of experiments, as GIF was relating to them. We have some ideas that we're starting to kick around that we want to validate before we go too far down with them, since we, at our core, we are lean thinkers, we are agile thinkers. But it's the unknown, right? So, yeah, one of the items that I know that the team is working on pretty actively right now is the idea of tracking down as many of the original Agile Manifesto signers as possible and getting their thoughts on where was your head leading into the manifesto event, and what are your thoughts after the signing, like what the industry has done with the output and the outcome. We think we owe it to the community, but also we're a bunch of selfish agile nerds. We want to know what these guys were thinking. We want to know what they think, you know? It's pretty interesting.
No, I think that's a great segue too, man. And GIF, I want to throw this to you in a minute, because I think that the manifesto look back was something that kind of spawned from something that you and I did together, which was last March when we put together Agile Madness, right? The point of Agile Madness was to talk through how do we as a coaching practice expand our collective intelligence about the history of this space. One of the things that we did was we set up almost like a March Madness bracket. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that was basically when you did that March Madness bracket, put your head in right there.
Yeah. So we did the March Madness bracket, and the March Madness bracket was, let's take as many Agile thought leaders, do a random draw of like 70 people that we can put names in a box for. And then we all took a series of six people, and we did deep dives and debriefs on what did those people accomplish in this space. And we almost had a playoff, right? Of, hey, if we had these measurements, would this person be better than that person? And it wasn't so much to say like who's the best agilist, as much as it was to say here's a platform to educate people about this history and paying homage to the people that kind of paved the road before us. And I think that was probably instrumental, Gifford, in having you talk with Alistair and start thinking through like, hey, what else could we do? Like, what could we use that platform, and what could we spin off that would be great for this community?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, the Agile Madness. And one of the reasons that this all kind of came about was we were doing that research for the manifesto signers was, you know, since it happened back in 2001, you know, all of that information is just kind of lost in the ether. Like there, it isn't on the it's not on the internet. If the internet wasn't, you know, like it was today, Alistair wasn't throwing together a blog of what he was doing right prior to the, or in the, you know, mid to late 90s when all this stuff was getting kicked off. So part of the goal of, you know, being able to go back and actually round up that information for the community and have that time capsule of what were we doing prior to the manifesto? What was it like being called up to be part of that manifesto? Is going to be really good and key for the community, because it was really difficult to find anything on really as we went through that exercise. So that was one of the driving factors to get me to you know, kind of get that, you know, get this project going. With that first interview where we, you know, with that first manifesto signer we've talked to, just the information that came out of that time capsule piece, and where he's, you know, since he's had a chance to live this and be there from like ground zero, to actually hear his thoughts and feelings on that, is really enlightening. He's feeling a lot of the pain that a lot of the, you know, our like-minded people that are already starting to join this channel are in. So, you know, from an overall standpoint, I think that, you know, this is going to be an extremely successful project, which is going to be able to let us lead into other types of projects around, you know, maybe interviewing the top testing people in the industry, and really being able to deliver to the community some stuff around, you know, very specific targeted areas, you know, based on the great people that we're going to end up meeting in the coalition.
So obviously more to come on the manifesto project that we're taking on, but the intent is just to get a couple of these interviews under our belt and start incrementally rolling out the output. What that output is, sometimes maybe an audio interview transcribed down into some text. Other times it may just be straight text. But the cool thing is that we're iterative and we're incremental. So we're going to roll these out as we have them and as they're meaningful, in the best format that we can. So it's super exciting. So as we're talking about what is the Agile Uprising, and, you know, why is it different than every other communication channel that's out there in the Agile world? I think one thing that we're really hinging on is our ability to be open and our ability to pivot off of any ideas. So and Andy Kleff, who's one of our founding members with us here, he came up with the concept of a constitution. And it seems really formal, it seems really regal, but we kind of went at it the way that we go at everything. We did it with some loose, you know, formality, and then we probably threw a little bit of our tomfoolery into. But what's interesting is it's published. If anyone's interested in what is the Agile Uprising and how do you guys plan to organize and how do you guys plan to format and structure yourselves, it's open source. We have it on agileuprising.com. You can get straight to the constitution from there. And we also plan, like, we will be governed by a board, and I don't want to bore this podcast with what the board is and all the rules and everything, but we plan to open source the board notes as well, the board meeting notes, so that everyone knows what we're talking about and where we're heading, and making sure that it's a collaborative, transparent organization. But there's three words that we kind of made sure were ingrained into our constitution. And it's, if you're an Agile practitioner of any number of years, these words should be familiar with you. And they're just respect, openness, and courage. And I think that's, it doesn't matter if you're a Scrum practitioner, if you're a Scaled practitioner, if you're Kanban, XP, whatever. Respect, openness, and courage are three words that make their way into every framework. And I think it's important for us just to take a minute and talk about the fact that that's what we're after. We're trying to build that open community and that open conversation across the globe with no barrier to entry other than just your interest. So we want to respect the fact that not everyone is going to want to pay $2,000 to clear the first hurdle, or $200 or $2. Somebody might just be an outside person looking in, wanting to understand, what is this Agile stuff, or what are these coaches talking about? There is a $0 barrier to entry into the Agile Uprising Coalition. And I think that's what kind of makes us different. We're bringing people together just under the admission fee of interest. So I think that touches on the openness, and then respect and courage. You know, it goes without saying that the people that are coming in with their own interest and their own curiosity, which I think is the strongest word to go with. So we want to create an environment that respects that. Not everyone is going to have been through or going to have led an Agile transformation, or not everyone is going to have been through multiple different frameworks or even been certified in any of these certifying bodies. But we're going to respect that. And we're going to go at it with the fact that these people are coming on their own with their own questions and they're seeking answers. So we're going to respect that. We're going to try to give as much guidance as we can and make sure that the community is supportive of that, right?
I would take it even a step further than that too and say that from a respect perspective, I know one of the things that I want to get out of this is I don't want to be the expert, right? I want to be able to sit back and just listen to some of the ideas or some of the challenges that people have. And I'll be honest, I mean, I learn stuff from people every single day, right? And I might be the most, experienced in the room. And to be honest with you, I don't even see it that way. I see it as these other folks are bringing these amazing ideas to the table. And it gives us such an opportunity to evaluate them and pivot and think through other innovations that might be important. And without respect as a cornerstone, right, people are going to come and present things. And, you know, if we didn't respect the fact that, you know, we were at least going to evaluate it without passing judgment, we might be quick to just want to give an answer to how to solve that problem. And to me, that's not what the point of this is. The point of this is to say, it's not about giving answers. It's about collectively increasing the intelligence of the community by asking questions and figuring out what are all the different options that people have used successfully, and then giving these new practitioners or even experienced ones something to put into their toolkit to take back, right? And I think that really frames out in my mind what respect means to me.
No, absolutely. And I think there's conversations going on right now on the coalition site that, you know, I don't know what the level of expertise of these people are because they're so young and some of these people are in different countries and such, but they give a perspective or a question, or they pose a mindset that is foreign to me. And to your point, like, Jason, I want to learn every single day. I am so happy to be proven wrong on things day in and day out, because every time I get proven wrong, that just means that I get to learn something new. So yeah, it is interesting. And I mean, if anybody gets anything from this podcast, at least go to the coalition site and read through some of the conversations that are ongoing, because there are some really interested world-class people talking about some things, scoping all the way from the most basic fundamentals all the way through some pretty complex things. I think there's even been some conversation about some emerging things like the GROWS methodology or the GROWS method, and, you know, things that are just coming into the Agile world now that are interesting. So yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying there, man. And then courage. I think anytime you're willing to put your words into an open community and you expose yourself, I think, Jason, you were talking about one of your first blog posts was, you know, you kind of revealing yourself and what you came through. Whenever someone takes a stand anymore in the society that we live in and you say, here's my thoughts on this, you're exposing yourself to be wrong or you're exposing yourself to be right. But I think it's courageous just for people to come into the community and start getting some opinions and being willing to be wrong. So I'm stoked. I think it's going to be one of one of the more amazing things I've been associated with in my career, just the ability to open up those communication channels with the coalition site. And then again, because I'm going to keep plugging it, because I think the network is what makes the coalition have value, is coalition.agileuprising.com. Join it, sign it, promote it, do what you can, get your friends. It's the way that we can take that initial conversation that was happening in conferences and on Slack channels and turning it into a real global movement.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I think all of us too have had, levels of, I don't want to call them failures because we always learn from those things, but things that have been unsuccessful. And I think that if we as leaders of setting up this coalition can kind of expose those things to a greater audience, we might be able to take the lead on establishing that it's okay to not be super successful or to have stories about things that we have tried that haven't worked. Right. We came from a perspective that we didn't necessarily, like at the time, it felt like this has to be the only way to do this. And then looking back, even whether it's weeks, months, or years, you go, oh my God, there were so many other things at my disposal that I just wasn't privy to. And, you know, I think one of the other things is I'm hoping that this community helps to moderate that respect foundational concept too, where, you know, if it seems like, you know, anyone is going after someone for being vulnerable and for having that courage, that we're going to regulate that. We're not going to let that happen, right? As long as it's a constructive conversation, that's what this is meant to be. But it's not meant to, you know, have some guy come in and say, this is the only way to do it. I have, you know, the perfect answer for everything. So, you know, I'm super excited about it too, man. I think we got a really great group so far, and it's going to be cool to see it grow.
You mean we can't have the guy that says 3 points equals 2 days?
I saw that guy. You know what? I'd like to have that guy in here, because it'd be great to hear, like, why did you think that was going to be a good idea? Cause maybe there was something to that. Like maybe within the confines of, what his experience was, like, maybe there was a reason to do that. And maybe in that particular moment in time, at that particular organization, that would have worked. Right.
So this is how I know you're more evolved than I am. You want a 5 whys, the 3 points equals 2 day guy, whereas I just want to nuke them. But cool. All right. So we kind of did a B minus level job of explaining what the Agile Uprising is, where it came from. But what's next? Like, what are we going to do? Where is this going to go? Why does it matter? You know, what's in it for me as not me, Ryan, but me, the guy listening or the gal listening or the person that's thinking about joining the Agile Uprising? Why do I give a damn about the three knuckleheads talking right now?
Gifford, do you have a response for that?
Why do we care about these three knuckleheads? So, I mean, like I said, you know, we are building a community that, you know, I keep just going back to that first value in the Agile Manifesto, the individuals and interactions. You know, and you guys have all alluded to it, you know, Jason, and we just covered the 5 whys of that, you know, of that 2-point story guy. You know, we've had some really great conversations around scaling and some of the fundamental bits and pieces that are in scaling that, you know, Andy Clef wasn't even aware that the Dunbar number, because I keep bringing up these weird scientific things because I'm going down some really weird experiment paths. But, you know, Andy Clef had no idea that the Dunbar number was buried in some of the way that SAFE puts together that art. So with us being able to, you know, bubble up these weird facts, we're educating people to go dig deeper. You know, that's kind of why, you know, I got into, you know, back really where I am today is because I found a nugget of information from an interaction with an individual that sent me down a path to go research and explore. So as much, you know, in my mind, we are going to open the eyes of a lot of practitioners that may have been the guy sitting there on LinkedIn yelling at each other that no Scrum is better, no Kanban is better. It's like watching Billy Madison and him fighting over the shampoo and the conditioner and which one's better. But like, that's where this place is going to go. It's going to be a place to, you know, validate ideas, like something crazy, like creating value stream containers as a method for scaling. Mm. Like that's an idea that I'm kicking around that Andy Clef was more than happy to jump in and take some time to, you know, help me refine it.
So Andy Clef is getting some love on episode one.
Yeah, I know, man. It's awesome. That, you know, I'll be able to share out with the community and get that feedback. I'll have that courage to post that information and have a sounding board for people to actually read, learn, you know, maybe validate me or you know, say that's going to be totally, totally difficult to do. Hmm. You know, I look for it to becoming a great place to be able to field questions like, you know, what do we do when our organization won't get away from the component teams? How do we still do Agile? How do we, you know, decrease dependencies and increase throughput? Could we use a product owner stand-up of some sort to coordinate that kind of stuff? Like, there are going to be some game-changing ideas that just come out of those individuals and interactions because it's going to push us to become better people.
Nice.
I mean, ideally, I would like to see more women in here. You know, the coalition isn't pulling in, you know, hasn't pulled in a ton of women. And I know that there are, you know, being at the Global Scrum Gathering last year, I talked to a lot of really intelligent women that had a lot of really great ideas. But, you know, hopefully this is going to be a place that, you know, everybody feels welcome. Yep. And, you know, with our openness, you know, it's not a man's world anymore. And, you know, it's the women in tech and women in Agile. you know, that hopefully that openness is going to bring them here and give them a, you know, a place in the recognition that they deserve. You know, I mean, I think we could even dedicate an entire podcast to the women of Agile.
I have to stand up for my mother right now or else she'd be slapping me in the back of the head. It was never a man's world. It's just we're finally getting enlightened to the fact that the women have as much, if not more, to contribute.
Amen.
Thank you. Yeah, so, I mean, the other thing is, I think you're right on. We definitely do owe it to the women that have been moving the needle as much, if not further. I mean, we have Lisa Atkins, who's the coach's coach. We have Joanna Rothman. Wow, I really struggled there. We have Mary Poppendyke. We have these women out there in the Agile community, in the Lean community, that are really starting to move the needle as thought leaders. And I think we do owe it to that whole segment to just start talking about it and engaging with them on a show. However, I think show two will be some of the other founding members getting together and talking about their interest in starting the Agile Uprising and their interactions on the coalition and some of the experiments they have going on. So that's probably going to be episode two.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say too, Ryan, that you know, this isn't about the three of us, right? This is because I think one of your questions was, what's going to make people come back? I mean, at some level, we are probably all the bravest person in the room on most days. And I know that I conduct experiments where I say things or write things down just to see if people are even paying attention to what we're talking about. But this is not about us. This is about getting this community together. It's about talking to the every person. It's about bringing the every person onto the show. And I think it's also about featuring the people that we've had great relationships with, that we have worked with over time, because, you know, none of us are a brand name. And the fact that we're able to take some time and kind of celebrate the successes of all these other people, in addition to bring the every person into the show over the course of time, I think really, really says something about us, right? This is not about us. This is about the community for sure.
Yeah. And with that said, none of us are brand names, but I know as we're coming to a close here, we do have a couple of events coming up. We will be supporting cast. So I know, James, you and I will be at Agile Camp in a few short weeks up in New York. Segment speakers. I'm going to be over in the UK doing a little UK tour, doing a couple events over there. I plan to talk about Agile Uprising, maybe not so much on stage at the Agile Camp, because we're not sponsors, but with anyone I run into. And surely when I'm in the UK, since I will be the featured speaker, I'm happy to start dropping our names and our URLs. But yeah, it's exciting. And I completely agree. The idea is not to promote ourselves. The idea is to promote Agile Uprising, to get that community built, to get the conversations going, to start creating those interactions and start partnering up people regardless of where they sit, what their geolocation space is. Get them talking to that thought leader in Poland or that person in Germany that came up with some great way to handle retrospectives that hasn't quite made its way to the U.S. Or maybe start sharing some of these great ideas that are coming out of the U.S. with folks in different areas. So I think that I'm going to give us now a solid B+, guys. I think we took it from a B- to a B+. I think we defined what the Agile Uprising is. Do either of you guys have any final thoughts before we call this one done?
Well, one of the things you keep leaving out is to follow us on Twitter at the Agile Uprising. So don't forget to plug our Twitter handle. Now I really appreciate being able to get together with you fine gentlemen to have this talk. So looking for the next one.
Yeah, I think my final word, Ryan, would be it's going to be fun to look back at this first episode. You know, after a couple of weeks, couple of months, and maybe even after a couple of years and kind of laugh at each other for where we actually were able to take this with the help of everybody else. So you know, I'm with you. B+, man.
Yeah, solid B+. That's what I'll shoot for. I don't want to throw those A's out there. I don't get too excited. This isn't getting taped up on the refrigerator, but this is definitely gonna get us by.
B's get the grease.
There it is. All right. Well, for anybody that's listening along with us, if you have any questions, we will soon be posting our email to get in touch. You can find most of us on the coalition board if you want to direct message, if you want to start a post about this podcast and really flame us hard, that's cool too. But we look forward to interacting. And that's really the message here, that we're trying to build a global platform that is free to join, that is easy to join, and it's going to start creating those interactions and start driving that agile mindset and that lean thinking forward. So hope to catch you next time. We'll do episode 2 very soon. And we look forward to talking to you either virtually or in person soon. Take care.